Welcome to Unscripted Wrestling, the most controversial wrestling podcast in the world. I'm your host, I'm in here with Doug, Eric, and Kenneth. How's everyone doing tonight?
Good. Pretty good.
Good.
Our episode tonight's on the legend, the man, the myth, Mick Foley, the hardcore legend. Before we get into that, Doug, plugs to get out of the way of what we're doing next week. Grace the listeners.
Okay, so first of all, listen to the Dirt Sheet Dudes, Anthony Boxman and Smark, every Wednesday and Friday night, 10 o'clock Eastern Time, mixer.com/dirtsheetdudes. They're basically the reason why we do the show at 8 o'clock now, so we don't interfere with their time slot. Because we need to avoid any and all lawsuits. mixer.com/dirtsheetdudes every Wednesday and Friday night, 10 o'clock Eastern time. Also, every Saturday night, or every other Saturday night, I should say, they do a show called The Hollywood Hangout. Also, mixer.com/dirtsheetdudes. Also, you listen to us every Friday night, usually around 8 or 9 o'clock Eastern time, depending on what better works for what better works for Daniel and I. Clinton usually doesn't. Apparently, Clinton never really matters because we always just do the show without him. Even though he's a vital part of our show.
And I could do it every other Friday, okay? Every other Friday.
That's right, seems like it's every other Friday.
I'm actually glad you're part. Well, the whole Mick Foley being on the poll was actually your idea, so basically you helped pick this episode.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
So after I insult you, I give you a compliment. There you go. Also, on Sundays, usually around 5 or 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern time, we have our This Week in Wrestling show. This upcoming Sunday, we got a lot to get to from a couple more releases in the WWE to some news from Ring of Honor. Also, we will be talking about... Huh?
Go ahead. You were going to say it anyway.
The Dark Side of the Ring with Dr. D. David Schultz. Talk a little bit about AEW and, what's going on there with the TNT title tournament. So a lot to get into this upcoming Sunday. Now, next Friday on the Unscripted Wrestling Podcast, we will be doing a tier list. Eric has been wanting to do this idea for 3 weeks now. So we are finally going to do it because we've made him wait long enough. We will be doing a tier list on factions/stables. The reason why I made him wait is because one of the fantasy matches he proposed was MJF versus Sami Zayn. I know that would be a main event in any gay bar in the country, but I sure as hell ain't going to fucking do it.
That would have been a tremendous match.
Like I said, a main event in any gay bar in the country. But no, so next week we will be doing a tier list on all factions or stables. So make sure to tune in for that. Clinton, are you going to be able to do next Friday's show or no?
No.
All right.
Are we only doing old factions, right? Not current? Or are we going to add those too?
Well, we could probably do
everything.
We're going to do everything just as long as we don't waste too much fucking time. If we shut up and get straight to the matter, then we'll be good.
Okay. Right.
So I don't know if that's going to happen or not. All right, Daniel, before we lose any more listeners, go ahead.
Well, tonight is a discussion about Mick Foley. I think this is an interesting because unlike every other episode, like,
you're cutting it
yeah,
out.
You're coming out. Downstairs. You're cutting out.
That didn't last long.
He never do it.
Hold on, I'm going downstairs so he can do it.
Ah. What's up with your phone? You got the coronavirus?
your phone
got that connection. The phone got the coronavirus.
Alright, hold on. Alright, here, Dan. Alright, here, buddy.
Stupid ass fucking phone.
This is interesting this week because I think unlike all the other weeks where we'll have some person that maybe Doug knows more about this particular person or Eric knows more, I think we all have memories of Mick Foley. You know, I think all of us really – I know I kind of grew up on the later side of his career, and you guys, of course, were around for the Attitude Era.
Yeah.
So you guys really know Mick Foley.
I grew up on the very early days at Cactus Jack in WCW. So I'll never forget when he came back to WCW for his second run and he jumped out of the gift box and attacked Sting.
Oh, shit.
Okay, so that's my earliest memory of Mick Foley is Cactus Jack. And I thought Cactus Jack was one of his better gimmicks because Cactus Jack was nuts.
Well, let's get into that first because a part of this discussion is we're going to go everywhere. We're not starting from the beginning like some other podcasts do. We're going to go everywhere. We're going to talk about every aspect of his career, no order. But let's get right into it. Clint, what was Mick Foley's best gimmick?
Okay. Well, I want to go right into it. I like the Mankind. I was more. I grew up with Mankind, and then going into Do Love. I like the Mankind Do Love. But I like all three. But I'll have to say, watching it, his best was Mankind. He had a lot of success at Mankind.
Right. Right, and Dude Love is an underrated one, so I do kind of want you to get into that a little bit, why you were entertained by that one, because I feel like when you ask anybody else's question, no one really mentions Dude Love. So what do you really like about that character?
Okay, Dude Love was more out there. You had the fun-loving, like, pool pranks of Mankind. You had the hardcore legend in Cactus Jack, but nobody really... connected well, more into Dude Love was. He was a party going character side of it. I love the music, the dancing of the butterfly with the hand going around, and then putting out there he was a tag team champion with Stone Cold, and then the rivalry he put on with Stone Cold going for the championship. What I like the best about it.
Well, and let me kind of just jump in here though too. You got to remember, all three of those gimmicks were basically different. Cactus Jack was the rebel, by Mankind was that psychotic like stereotype gimmick, and Dude Love is basically. Fat Shawn Michaels. Okay.
Okay, now, you are really trying to cut in and out. Just listen up. Hello?
Hello? Doug?
Doug? Daniel?
Hello? Hang up.
I'll be
I think you're going outside.
Okay.
Okay,
I think Eric, we can now candles up. I hear someone.
Yep. All right.
They can't hear you. Hang up and go outside. All right, guys, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Now.
You can hear me now?
We can hear you now.
We can hear you now.
All right.
This is a bunch of baby back bullshit.
It's your phone. Your phone got Corona Wi-Fi, isn't it? It's all right.
All right.
Well,
let's fucking try this again. All right, go ahead, Daniel.
All right, can everyone hear me?
Yeah, we can.
Yeah.
All right, this episode is not sponsored by our connection by Verizon Wireless.
Oh, so that's Verizon going down.
Yeah, we fucked up the sponsorship deal, so they're trying to mess up the show. But, a lot of people, like I said, Dude Love's underrated. I like Dude Love because I like the idea of a not so handsome person or kind of, I'm not ugly, but like an average Joe acting like a heartthrob. I thought that was hilarious.
It's you.
And I thought him and Austin were hilarious together in that aspect. And even when, didn't they do an angle where Kane beat the shit out of him? And then that's why Mankind had to come back or something?
Yeah, because Dude Love, all right, so back in 97 when Kane first came out, Kane's gimmick was he would interrupt matches. So as soon as somebody would enter the ring, before the next person would come out, before the opponent would come out, Kane's music would hit. And he'd come out and basically beat the shit out of the person in the ring. Dude Love was scheduled to take on The Undertaker. So the lights hit. Kane came out instead. So Kane beat up Dude Love. And then Mankind then had to come out and, kind of take over, fight the battle.
Yeah.
Because Cactus really wasn't known yet. Cactus had the one match on Raw with Triple H.
Yeah, and the thing is, well, I want to ask Eric first because we all said our – Eric, what's your favorite Foley gimmick out of the three faces of Foley?
Mankind. The first time I saw him, especially we all know the epic Hell in a Cell match where Undertaker throws him off the cell. We'll get into that a little later too, so – yeah, that's one of my first memories of Mankind. And the boil room brawls with Taker and whoever else he fought.
Okay.
Yeah, and the thing is he's very – a lot of people – I forgot what legend said this, Doug, but someone said how Cactus Jack was kind of one-dimensional.
JR said it.
And he's not wrong. But I think it's okay for that character to be one-dimensional because it's badass. I do like the Mankind gimmick a lot. I think my favorite, though, would just be Mick Foley. I liked it when he was just himself as, like, a legend who had to, like, show a young buck. Like him and Randy Orton, his WrestleMania match with Edge. Even the shit he did with Carlito wasn't terrible. I liked him as just Mick Foley with the red flannel jacket.
Right. See, and here's the thing, too. And the one thing I always remember about Mick Foley is always the odd pairing tag teams. Because, like, even if you kind of go back to the WCW days, who was he partners with? Abdullah the Butcher, Kevin Sullivan. And they made that work because it was always like the odd couple. Nuttier than fruitcake tag teams. Abdullah the Butcher, Kevin Sullivan. He goes to ECW and teams with Mikey Whipwreck.
Yeah.
And he comes into WWE and he makes the thing with Austin work with him as Dude Love. Vader, when they were kind of teaming together.
Yeah.
The Kane deal. Cactus Jack and Chainsaw Charlie. I fucking love that shit. And Rock.
I did too.
Rock, Al Snow.
Rock,
I mean, the list goes. And, it's a list of characters that should not work with Mick, but
he made it work. And even though a lot of them were short-lived tag teams, they were still iconic moments.
Who's the best?
Yep.
Clinton. And Clinton, in your opinion, who was Mick Foley's best tag team partner?
The Rock.
You said The Rock.
I was going to say that too.
Who would you say?
They didn't do it for very long, but I am very partial to his team with Chainsaw Charlie.
Yeah. Well, their little WrestleMania moment that they got was awesome.
Yeah.
Against the Outlaws.
Yeah, the WrestleMania moment there. I mean, I think also his partnership with Kevin Sullivan was good too, because in WCW, because that was such an iconic moment that they had at that Slamboree, which was in Philadelphia, by the way, and that Broad Street Bully street fight against the Nasty Boys, and, you know, the four guys beat the shit out of each other, and it was regarded as one of the best matches of WCW because Cactus Jack had a really good thing going with the Nasties. You insert Kevin Sullivan, who, by the way, at that time was the booker. Or he wasn't the booker, but he was getting close.
One of them, yeah.
He was the guy Bischoff chose. Anytime Bischoff wanted somebody to get heat, he would say to Kevin Sullivan, get this guy some heat. And they were looking at a way to replace Max Payne off of television, because Cactus and Max Payne had, were teaming, but Max Payne was falling out of favor and Bischoff was looking to get rid of him. So they decided, okay, we're going to put Kevin Sullivan with this guy. And plus, Mick was also falling out of favor because he had just lost the year.
Yeah.
But Cactus Jack and Kevin – it's Cactus Jack and Kevin Sullivan and Cactus Jack and Chainsaw Charlie. Neither team really lasted that long, but you still got some moments out of there.
You remember Max Payne? He sucked.
Max Payne.
I don't remember him.
Max Payne was a good. Max Payne was a good gimmick, but the issue was he wasn't really that technical of a wrestler. You could get something out of him every once in a while. The Foley stuff worked, but it was he just wasn't, you know. It didn't work, like. The gimmick of the sadistic rock star. I mean, he was a heel Van Hammer,
yeah.
Almost. Problem is, babyface Van Hammer didn't work.
Yeah.
So how the hell is a heel Van Hammer? I mean, it was a cool gimmick when you first see it, but then when you try to humanize him, as like, okay, now you're babyfacing him and putting him with, as cool as that was. He didn't get over, and it was almost like he was dragging Cactus down.
Yeah, and I'm glad we're here in the conversation because, Clint, do you remember any of Cactus Jack's work in early WCW? It was like 92?
Well, no. I never really watched. I started watching probably as far back as 93, when back from the very first episode of Raw on the network, and working my way then watching slowly, but really until now. Huh. But I did actually watch the, I think it was Film Invader, I think the greater.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, that's
yeah.
What did you think of that
match? I think it was like the Texas match. Yeah, the very first, my own first and only Texas test. I just enjoyed it. It was.
Yeah, Doug, why don't you get into that match a little bit? Because I think in the legacy of Mick Foley, I think that's in there. That match particular. And the rivalry as a whole.
I think people will more remember April 24th, 1993, which is the date of a episode of WCW Saturday Night. It's on the network. If everybody wants to go check it out, I do recommend it. Cactus and Vader had a feud going on. The week prior, Cactus beat Vader by countout.
Vader went nuts, asked for a rematch. On this episode of Saturday Night, in this match, in the rematch, Vader powerbombed Cactus on the concrete floor.
Yeah.
Cactus went. Cactus then disappeared for months, and they did this thing called Lost in Cleveland, where Cactus had amnesia.
And he was homeless.
And he was basically he turned into like a Jimi Hendrix type thing. A Jimi Hendrix type hippie. Okay. So
he was homeless people, right?
Yeah. He was living with the homeless or something. He was the king of the homeless or whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
And it was so stupid. And they had this reporter come in, and then they did a deal where they brought in Colette and Dewey. And obviously they were actors because Dewey was 2, maybe 3. At that time, and they brought in like a 7 or 8 year old kid.
Really?
That's how stupid these things were. So, and he's like, well, older than what the actual Dewey was.
Yeah.
Okay. And so Cactus is like, look, I don't remember you. I don't remember you. And the woman that played Colette was crying. I mean, and that definitely was not Colette Foley, because this woman on there was a lot better looking than what Colette Foley actually is.
She was kind of hot back in the day.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to say that. So anyway, so Cactus comes back at a Clash of Champions in August of 93, and they kind of embark on this feud. They kind of culminated at Halloween Havoc 93, in a non-title Texas death match. Vader was the world champion for the majority of 1993. And he ended the title at only 2 pay-per-view events. Slamboree 93 against the Bulldog, which he won. Or no, he lost by DQ. And Starrcade 93 in December of that year against Flair. All his other big main event attraction matches were non-title.
Oh, wow.
Because at that point, Dusty cared more about getting the story over than he cared about getting the belt over.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, they had to feature the NWA title, more, because they still had that agreement.
Oh, wow.
So with the Cactus and Vader deal, was they had this Texas Death Match. It was the gimmick was called Spin the Wheel, Make the Deal. They have a wheel. 12 stipulations on it. Whatever it lands on, that's what you're getting.
Right.
They got Texas Death. Vader wins it because of Harley Race interfering. The best part, I think, was the next month at the Battle Bowl pay-per-view. The first match on the show was Vader and Cactus Jack teaming up. And Vader's reaction, you have Riff Rogers sitting next to him, right? And Riff Rogers is just sitting in his chair. Vader hears his name called next to Cactus's. And Vader picks up the chair with Riff Rogers still sitting in it and flings it halfway across the fucking room.
Yeah.
So Riff Rogers goes flying down on the ground, and the chair goes flying across the fucking room.
Poor guy.
And then Harley Race is going, you have to get along with him to get the Battle Bowl. So what did they do? They fought as soon as they both got to the ring. And Harley Race is trying to say, get along with each other. You have to get along to go to Battle Bowl. Vader got tired of hearing it, so Vader hit Harley Race.
And then Harley got back up, right?
Yeah.
He went to hit him.
Yeah, and Vader wanted it. Yeah, he wanted to hit Vader. And then, I mean, that match, they wrestled against Stevie Ray, who's Booker T's brother, and Native American Charlie Norris. And Vader was so fired up in that match that he hit Stevie Ray with a couple of live rounds.
Yeah.
Punches, by the way, for anybody that doesn't understand the terminology. And Vader hit him so hard that Stevie Ray was so pissed off that when he went to the back, he had a gun in his bag.
What, really?
Yeah. It's the way he tells the story. Stevie Ray wanted to shoot Vader for taking liberties out on the ring. Now, Vader's about 6'3", 6'4". Stevie Ray's 6'6".
So if you're going to whine like a little baby because somebody that's actually shorter than you took some liberties, instead of just hauling off and hitting the fucker back, then, you know, there's something wrong with you.
Yeah.
But anyway, but yeah, so basically that's the Vader Cactus storyline. And then Vader was actually the one that was in the ring with Cactus when Cactus lost his ear, which pissed Bischoff off, obviously. Because 94 was the year, even though it was probably one of Cactus's better years, 94 was the year that Bischoff really started to think, do I really need this fucking guy?
Yeah, well, he didn't fit in the vision, right, of what Bischoff wanted. Bischoff wanted established, older wrestlers to carry the company in the new millennium, basically. Well, not the new millennium, but to carry him into the future. And he wasn't interested in Cactus Jack.
Eric Bischoff wanted any and all wrestlers that at one time put their tongue in Hulk Hogan's ass.
So he leaves. Well, let's get into the feud with Sting, too, because I think that was a great feud.
Yeah, that's probably what put him on the map. That's why they brought him in at first, because Dusty thought that he would be a perfect antagonist for Sting.
And I think if you think in his time in WCW, the three things you think of is his work with Abdullah and like the tag team and stuff like that, and even the rivalry, his work with Vader and his work with Sting. There's other stuff too, but I think those are the three big highlights.
Yeah, and you're not wrong. I mean, the thing with Abdullah was, because him and Abdullah were both trying to get rid of Sting. And, just a few short months ago, we did a retrospective on a show called Starrcade 91. And, Cactus Jack, he had the team with Sergeant Buddy Lee Parker. And they took on Ricky Steamboat and Todd Champion, and Abdullah beat the hell out of Sergeant Buddy Lee Parker. And, it was just this whole thing. For like the next couple of matches, all people were talking about is Cactus Jack and Abdullah the Butcher because they're both fucking nuts.
Yep.
So, and the team worked. Like I said, I mean, you can also kind of throw in there, the work he did with Ron Simmons was pretty good. A match with Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff at Super Brawl 3, where he won by hitting Orndorff in the head with a shovel. So, I mean, Foley had a lot of good feuds. Foley knew how to get people over, and the guys that worked with him, that agreed to work with him in the Falls Count Anywhere, street fight style, and could adapt to that. And Sting was probably the first one that necessarily did not fit that mold of being a hardcore street fight. But their match at that Beach Blast in 92 was actually really good.
Yeah, and I think the feud with Sting works because you almost got the polar opposite, right? You got the crazy badass kind of Cactus Jack, because he was originally Cactus Jack Manson. It's kind of supposed to give off a serial killer vibe a little bit, right?
Yeah, he was basically named after Charles Manson.
So, and then you got Sting, who's bleach blonde. Face paint. Woo! He does the woo thing. Not Ric Flair's woo, obviously.
Yeah.
He's fucking... Sting is the perfect baby face at the time. Before he reinvents himself. And then you got Cactus, who's almost the polar opposite. I think that made for an interesting feud. I think you got two guys that are completely... And I think that always makes a good... Not always, but... I mean, if you take a Flair and Dusty Rhodes, complete opposites. The Rock and Austin, complete opposites. John Cena and CM Punk, complete opposites. That usually works in professional wrestling, in my point of view. So that's why I think that feud really worked. But moving on, I'm assuming you guys have seen some of his ECW stuff, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
If I
never really watched. Yeah, I never really watched Cactus and ECW. I heard they start. I always figured that Cactus Jack started in ECW, and then had a small run in WCW, and then jumped right into the whole Mick Foley Mankind gimmick in WWE and finished it off there.
See,
I mean,
the thing is, Clintus, is it's actually the opposite. He actually had a bigger run in WCW, then he had a smaller run in ECW, like a little run, and then he went to the WWF, kind of like what Steve Austin did. A common misconception, because Mick Foley is the hardcore legend, is that he was like an ECW original. When he kind of was, but he wasn't. He's not an ECW guy like everyone thinks he is. You know, he did have a couple good moments there, but he's not like a Tommy Dreamer or a Sandman, if you will, where ECW is ingrained in him. I think a lot of people get that kind of mixed up because he is the hardcore legend. They think, he must be an ECW original. Yeah, and he did work some spots there, but I don't think that's the best part of his legacy. I actually don't even think that's in the top five.
No. It's not necessarily in the top five, but you got to remember a lot of guys, like before they would get to Vince, it's almost like you had to go through Paul to learn how to cut an interview.
Yeah, he did what Austin did, basically.
Yeah, and he did it before.
Yeah.
I mean, Austin, he didn't necessarily do it before Austin did it. I mean, he was there before Austin.
Yeah.
But Austin became more polished right away, and they wanted him before they wanted Foley. It took Jim Ross getting J.J. Dillon's job as the executive vice president of talent relations in order for Mick to really get noticed in WWE or WWF at the time. J.J. Dillon felt like Mick did not fit the role. So he passed him up. Jim, well, you know what? Let's give him another shot. And, you know, brought him in. They gave him this different character, this Mankind character, which worked. And it worked because The Undertaker put him over right away.
Yeah.
See, that's the thing, is that, like, if the character can get over, because remember, that first night Mankind was there, I mean, it's not necessarily known on his first night, or he's not necessarily known for on his first night beating Bob Holly. He's known for attacking The Undertaker.
Yeah.
All right, and making The Undertaker foam out of the mouth with that mandible claw. So that's what he's known for. That's how you make a debut. Now, it's good going out there and getting a win over Bob Holly, who was basically just there at that point to put everybody over.
Was he Sparky Plug yet?
No, this is past Spark Plug. He was Bob Holly, still had the race car gimmick. He had a race car gimmick and a bald spot. I don't even think he had the horrible attitude yet. He was basically, it was his job to get to put Mick over, which he did, and Mick basically took off from there. Because then he had the feud with The Undertaker. Then what?
And
then after
really
Undertaker, well, actually, while still feuding with Undertaker, he gets a shot at Shawn Michaels. And he kind of forms this weird alliance with Goldust. And it's just like, you know, he's doing all this stuff. He's all over the place, but it's still, what is he most known for those first couple of years? Taker. Okay, so that's how he was able to get himself over. So, yes, the ECW stuff he can be remembered for because that helped with the promos. Even though Cactus actually was a pretty good promo in WCW.
Yeah.
Especially when he would get loud. I mean, I know a lot of people didn't like his interviews from WCW, usually because Tony Schiavone had to wipe a bunch of spit up out of his hair. But Cactus could cut a good interview everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, good. The one famous ECW promo I remember is when him and Whiprack were a team. I forgot who they were facing in the next week, but they pissed another team off. And
he's like, what are we going to do, Mikey? And Mikey's like, I'm going to get my head ripped off. And then Cactus is like, he likes it. He really likes it. And he's trying to, like, hype him up. And I thought that was really good. I do think he got polished similar to how Steve Austin did. But to me, the ECW stuff is just a footnote.
Yeah.
I do think he did a couple memorable things. He famously left because he saw a sign in the crowd that said Kane Dewey.
Right, which was in reference to his, which was in reference to his 3-year-old son.
So this fan with the sign was basically saying that his 3-year-old son needed to get whipped with the Singapore cane, kind of like what happened to Cody Rhodes by MJF. Singapore cane matches were famous in ECW.
And he was feuding with the Sandman at the time.
And he was feuding with the Sandman, but that's a 3-year-old kid, you know?
Yeah.
I know
ECW fans were ruthless. ECW fans were ruthless at that
time.
Yes,
they were.
It's got nothing to do with the city that they were in.
New York and Philadelphia.
Yeah, well, mainly Philadelphia.
Hey, it was New York, too.
Yeah. Mainly Philadelphia. But, like, they're ruthless and they're bloodthirsty. And there's really nothing wrong with that unless you want to cane a 3-year-old kid or you boo a guy because you keep, or you boo somebody because he keeps getting hurt, or you boo Santa Claus.
Okay.
Or whatever the fuck. It's just, you know, or you boo a guy for winning a battle royal because the Billy Goat that you wanted to win got eliminated early. But it's just that fan base, and it the ruthless fan base. Mick realized, you know, I don't want to deal with this because Mick really didn't drink the Kool-Aid anyway. In Jim Ross's words, he was more of a Tang man. But it was basically Mick knew it was time to go because, again, also at that point, too, what are you making in ECW? $25-$50 a night?
Yeah.
That's if Heyman wasn't pocketing half of it? So... it's just like it really wasn't worth the money. You're going on
exactly.
And you're getting your ass kicked every night and you're putting your body through all this shit only to, after you receive your payoff, have Heyman come up to you, rub your belly a little bit, and as he's rubbing your belly, he's taking the money back out of your pocket and putting it in his wallet. So it's just like, so is it really worth it, though?
Yeah, and moving on from ECW, Clinith, you had said your favorite gimmick was Mankind. Did you enjoy his earlier stuff in WWF, the heel kind of Mankind, or did you like the babyface kind of goofier side of him?
To tell you the truth, I kind of like them all equally. I mean, it depends. I grew up, I'm like, when you first watch it, you see the big distinct, the heel killish part of Mankind is when he's started out with The Undertaker. I mean, it takes a lot of person to actually want to make a debut and go against and want to start his major feud against the top dog of the company, which is at the time, it's like The Undertaker, or top dog, or I'll say, known as now, was the top dog, was The Undertaker. And
yeah,
to have him be able to go against The Undertaker and to hold his own, and not only hold his own, the whole thing with the urn, having the first ever Buried Alive match.
That's right,
The Undertaker,
yeah.
The Hell in a Cell. And then not only have in between and have the match of the year against Shawn Michaels, because I did win Slammy.
Forgot about that
WWE
one. Yeah,
the match of the year against Shawn Michaels for the WWF championship at the time, and then go back team take a hiatus, the only man who was specific has 3 shots to win the Royal Rumble in 1 year. Started out as what, Cactus Jack, Dude Love, or Cactus Jack, Mankind, and Dude Love. All three folks in the 98 Royal Rumble, or was it the 98 Royal Rumble? Was it? It was the 98 Royal Rumble, or was it the 99?
I think it was 98. 99, he fought Rock.
Duck?
Hello?
Are they there? They left.
Oh, yeah, they did. It cut off.
Yeah.
I think it was the 98 because Mick Foley fought The Rock in the I Quit match.
Yeah.
Unless Dude Love and Mick Foley showed up in the Rumble. I don't know. Oh, here. Yeah.
No, it was 98. Okay.
Oh. Hello?
Am I back?
Yeah, you're back.
All right, this stupid ass fucking phone.
We didn't know you were.
It never cuts
off.
Out when I'm talking to my mother, but when I'm doing important business like talking to you guys, it cuts out.
Okay. Sure, all right. Should I start? All right. I'll go into what I was saying.
Yeah.
I'm not exactly sure where did you guys cut off what I was talking about.
It was
right after how you were talking about how you enjoyed them all equally.
Okay. Oh, wow. Damn. Okay, then I'll just start over again. Okay. So, we'll go to equally. Go into the heels factors when he goes and takes on and starts his first major rivalry with The Undertaker. And not only did you take The Undertaker, but from The Taker, you go from the major rivalry, the Urn with Paul Bearer, and then you go and start off till the baddie alive. He does. With Taker. The Catcher and the Urn. And then you have take a break from there and go off and have the match of the year with Shawn Michaels for the WWF Championship.
Was that my game?
Yeah.
Also, yeah,
was
Philadelphia.
That was match of the year?
That was match of the year. It was.
Center end because a lot of people didn't think that the match would be that good, and it was.
Yeah. It actually was, and it also won a Slammy from it, I remember. So it was one of the future early Slammies that nobody really knew about, but they matched it up when he had a rematch of the Raw's War. In 98.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It wasn't Slammy. The Slammy wasn't really that big of a thing until, like, until probably about after going in 2010 or whatnot.
Yeah.
But at the time, but later on, but the match was really amazing. I didn't really think it was a get good, but when they hyped it up, the rematch of Shawn Michaels, and Mankind, as a match of the year, you can't hardly but respect the things he did. The fun loving Mankind, I love when he started with The Rock.
The Rock
going
stuff?
Forming,
yeah.
Yeah, The Rock stuff with the whole, I want to form the Rocket Sock Pack, the Rocket Sock. That's what I love.
That was awesome.
Yeah. I think that stuff was really good. And I think, and this is what, he's not well, he should be more known for how much he gets other people over, because The Rock was kind of a dick at that point. He was still kind of heelish, even though he was a babyface. And Mick really made him likable.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, he kind of humanized him a little bit, you know? And because you got this chiseled, you know, superstar next to this, you know, average Joe who liked to crack jokes and say his catchphrases. I thought that stuff was awesome.
That was
Mick.
Definitely awesome.
What's up?
That was definitely awesome. And Mick has always been an underdog, too. That's why he's always been a fan favorite.
He has. Now, my favorite Mick Foley kind of feud, and it's actually one of my favorite feuds of all time, is Mick Foley and The Rock. I think they were great in The Rock and Sock Connection, but I think they were way better rivals. The I Quit Match at Royal Rumble 99, I know it's brutal. It's really brutal, and it's probably hard to watch now with everything we know about concussions. But that match was awesome. And even the match at Rock Bottom wasn't bad. And obviously, the match in the main event of that, the Raw, when they went up against with WCW.
Yeah.
And then they ended up kicking their ass because Foley won the title. That's one of the one of the biggest highlights of Foley's career. If not the biggest.
What wrong with that, Doug? Or I forget.
January 4th, 1999. On that Nitro was the stupid finger poke of doom with Nash and Hogan. See, Tony Schiavone, because that Raw was taped, they knew what was going on. So Bischoff told Tony Schiavone to tell the fans what happened. He said, if you're thinking about changing the channel, don't, because Mick Foley, who wrestled once here as Cactus Jack, is going to win the world title. And he goes, oh, that'll put butts in seats.
What? So backfired.
Yeah, and it backfired. And, I mean, it still made Mick feel like shit because he had always gotten along with Tony.
Yeah.
But that was – it was an insane amount of people. Like 3 million people switched
800,000.
Over. 800,000 people switched over that night just because of that comment. And that's –
imagine there was social
media. That has to be the biggest moment in his career because not only did he win the world title for the – because that's when Mrs. Foley's baby boy made it, you know.
Yeah.
But he also helped them not win the war, but that was a big statement. You know, they were already getting there to where they were winning, but that was the stamp right there. And
it also helped that Hogan and Nash had a world title match where all it took was a finger poke.
I know, and I'm not saying Mick is the main reason, but that's still a big hallmark on his career.
Let me just kind of preface it with this.
Okay.
Look at the talent roster in WWF 1999, starting at that point. Austin, Undertaker, Kane, Mankind, Rock, Triple H. Those are your kind of like main event. I mean, Triple H wasn't necessarily a main eventer, but he was kind of there.
Yeah.
Then you had your mid-card guys of like Shamrock, Boss Man, X-Pac, the Outlaws, also Val Venus was really coming up. Jeff Jarrett, Owen Hart, Goldust, Blackman, D'Lo Brown, Mark Henry. And these guys were, you know, not necessarily, they were stars.
Yeah, they could go.
To a point, they could go, and each one of them felt important. I mean, also the Brood, too. You can't forget the Brood. Can't forget Darren Drozdov. The Acolytes. Those guys were made to feel important, okay? You know, Godfather, too. Those guys were made to feel important. They were not being held back. Each one of them was given a spot to shine in. Look at WCW's talent roster at the time. WCW's talent roster at the time. Hogan, Nash, Goldberg, Luger, Sting was out with an injury. DDP, Scott Steiner, Scott Hall, Booker T, Chris Benoit, Dean Malenko, Raven, Eddie Guerrero, Rey Mysterio, Billy Kidman. The list goes on and on. What do all those guys have in common? They were held back by Scott Hall. Well,
What do all those guys except for Scott Hall, Kevin Nash, and Hulk Hogan have in common? They were all held back by Scott Hall, Kevin Nash, and Hulk Hogan. Because those three guys cared more about each other, about themselves, than they did everybody else. In the WWF, everybody cared about everybody. Unless Shawn Michaels was around, and then everybody turned into complete pricks because Shawn would turn everybody against each other. Sorry, Eric, but your hero was a dick at that point in time.
I know. I know he was.
As a matter of fact, I'll give you a Mick Foley story about how big – I'll give you a Mick Foley story about how big of a piece of shit that guy was. WrestleMania 15. Everybody remembers who was Rockin' Austin, right?
Oh, yeah, I know that.
Yeah.
All right. Vince Russo had it written out that Mick Foley was going to be in the match. It was going to be a triple threat because they felt Mick had earned it. Shawn Michaels, because he was a no good piece of shit at that time, and he was probably high or whatever, probably had cum on his face after just sucking off Hunter. Went to Stone Cold Steve Austin and said, "You don't want Mick in the match. You want it to be you and Rock one-on-one because Mick will drag the match down." He put all this doubt in Austin's head. And Austin, for some reason, listened to him.
That is not the story I heard, but continue.
It's the story that Vince Russo tells. So I don't even know why I'm wasting airtime telling this story. But... Austin goes to Vince and says, "I think it should just be Rock and I." Austin was a big draw at the time, so Vince listened.
That's not the story I heard. The story I heard, the popular story, was that it was supposed to just be Rock and Austin, and Michaels wanted the triple threat because he didn't believe in The Rock yet. He didn't think The Rock was a big enough draw. So he wanted Foley in there to help bring the main event status. So I heard
just
the complete opposite.
Opposite.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't know none of this. This is the first I actually heard about this. I did too. It's the first time I
heard
about
it. We're going to have to Google and fact check later.
Well, who told the story you heard?
I've heard multiple shooters, like multiple superstars tell the story.
Name one or two.
Mick.
You've heard Mick said that?
Yeah, I've heard Mick said that. I might have heard your dad say it. I think Cornette might have said something about it. I can't remember.
Yeah, I believe Cornette versus Vince.
I've also read articles about it, too, and that's why The Rock and Michaels, because it's notorious that The Rock and Michaels do not like each other.
Yeah.
They have heat, and apparently that is where the heat stemmed from. Is what I heard.
I'm all right. That, to be honest with you, I'm not going to take back what I said about Shawn Michaels at that time. He was a piece of shit.
Well, he's a piece of shit in either story. That's the only common denominator.
But, yeah, no,
wow.
I'll 100%. Vince Russo, if you're somehow listening to this, if you're using this as playing in the background while you're taking a bath or whatever, fuck you. And I believe my father, Jim Cornette, and Mick Foley, because I don't think Mick Foley's ever told a lie, unless it was probably to his wife on where he was the night before. So, Vince Russo, go fuck yourself. I don't believe a thing you said.
Well, either way, we're getting sued now, by the way. Either way, Mick Foley... is such, you named the WWF roster, and it's a really solid roster, especially around that time. And the fact that Mick Foley was kind of always rising to the top, it says a lot about the man. Now, you can say what you want. No, he was never the main guy. He didn't need to be. You had Rock and Austin. He was a great number three, number four guy. To me, the Attitude Era goes, because I actually put him above Undertaker, because I think Undertaker had some dumb shit in the Attitude Era. I thought he had a lot of great shit, too. But I think some of the stuff he did was a little too much. In the Attitude Era, my top five would be Austin. I mean, I like Rock better, but obviously Austin, because he was the draw. Austin, Rock, Kane, Mankind. And then you can throw Hunter in for the last half. For, like, maybe 2000, 2001. But that because the Kane was awesome to me. But Mick Foley, he was such a great, because he still was a main eventer and he was still a big deal, but he could also be on the third match of the card and make it great. And that's the thing about Mick Foley.
Exactly.
And you gotta remember too, and this is where, like, again, Mick Foley not only was successful in the ring, but he turned it into quite the big, you know, book career.
Yeah.
You know, one of the main reasons why we're doing the show, we pick, you know, wrestlers that have written books, because, and Mick Foley was the first person to make the wrestling book. I mean, wrestlers had written books before that. All right, it happened before. Mick, I think, was the first person that wrote a book that people actually read. Okay. And he made that popular. So, and then he would go on and he'd write another one, and then another one, and then he started writing kids' books and fiction books.
He's a New York Times bestseller.
He's a New York Times bestseller because he wanted something to fall back on just in case his wrestling career were to end. Okay, which he did.
Exactly.
I mean, he's no longer wrestles, but people still remember him for writing those books. And, you know, wrestlers have written tremendous books since then. Okay, I have about 20 of them sitting in here at the house. I got 5 of them already this week. Well, 4, 5th one's on the way. But and I've got like 10 of them that I still need to read. So, but that's where he's the one that made it popular to write a book, because his book was the first one that was ever really recognized as, holy shit, this thing can actually be good. And then China wrote a book and almost ruined the whole goddamn thing.
And he's got other talents too. I mean, his stand-up comedy career he did for a while.
Yeah, because he can tell great stories.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. You have to be... That's where, like, stand-up comedian, author, and professional wrestler, kind of, like, that's, like, the one common goal, is you have to tell a great story.
It's entertainment.
Yeah. The more of a reaction you're going to get, and Mick knows how to get those reactions. And other guys, you know, have taken, Shawn Michaels has written 2 books. Shawn Michaels' first book was awesome. I haven't read the second one yet, but, you know, I'm sure it's good. Jim Ross has written 2 books. Read most of the first one. Gonna read the second one probably, who knows when. I'm gonna try something. I'm actually gonna try to read 5 or 6 books at once.
Why?
Oh, wow.
I don't know, just because I'm stupid and I'll probably have a lot to do.
You'll read 1 chapter a day from each book.
Maybe. Mick Foley. I want to talk about the documentary.
Even
The
Rock
wrote
a book.
Hello? You choose The Rock. Hello?
Hello?
You guys
hey.
Can hear me, right?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, but... I'd like to touch on Beyond the Mat. Have you ever, you guys seen that movie, the documentary Beyond the Mat? From?
Oh, yeah, I did see it. I saw it.
Yeah.
I might have watched it a few years ago.
Yeah, it's been a while for me too, but it's a big, to me, it's a big moment for Mick Foley because he was one of the biggest parts in that movie. And it's infamous because, like the match we were talking about earlier, it was the Royal Rumble 99 match with The Rock, where The Rock took liberty with Mankind and hit him with too many chair shots, which is a shoot.
Yeah.
He was only supposed to hit him a few times. The Rock can be a piece of shit, too. I guess he got carried away in the moment, but he just started fucking... I mean, you watch the match, there's like 10 to 15 chair shots. So...
Yep.
And Mick Foley's little daughter was in the crowd, and Dewey, the little kid. And by the way, Noelle is fucking smoking now. I follow her on Instagram.
Not around this time, though. Around, if we say she's smoking around this time, no,
not that.
I'm not going back.
She now she's hot because she's of age.
yeah, she is.
And, like, seeing the little kids crying in the background and seeing, like, the wife trying to calm the kids down and while dad's getting his ass kicked. It's a traumatic experience, and it's crazy. Doug, what are your thoughts on that? Do you think it should have been filmed, or do you think it was too much?
What, them filming them in the crowd, or?
Yeah, the whole thing.
I don't think they should have been there. I mean, even if Mick was going to take a... Give me the phone. Even if they were only going to film a couple of shots, if Mick's getting hit in the head and he's going to bleed, the kids don't need to see that.
Exactly.
I mean, there's certain things kids don't need to see. Kids don't need to see... There's certain things kids do not need to see their parents doing. Getting the shit beat out of them, fucking, or doing drugs. Those are three things that the kids do not need to see parents doing. Unfortunately. Anyway, I'm not going to go. Even though Kenny's not on the show this week, so my mom can't listen in. But kids don't need to see that shit. So I think it was, and first of all, that shit should not have been filmed anyway. The guy that did the movie of, I mean, it was an all right documentary. I like the Terry Funk stuff better because that seemed like that had a happy ending.
Well, I don't think it was supposed to have a happy ending, and I think the Jake Roberts stuff was pretty impactful. That hard to watch though.
It was hard to watch because, you know, he was still – Jake Roberts was nowhere near getting clean. He's finally there now, okay? But he was nowhere near getting clean back then. He was still more into, you know, doing all that crazy shit. I mean, and he had alienated everybody that was around him. But getting back to Mick Foley is that Mick, that whole thing with The Rock, it was so brutal and so vicious. Not my favorite Mick Foley Royal Rumble moment. I think Mick Foley had a much better match the next year as Cactus Jack against Triple H.
Yeah, that was a better match.
I really liked the Rumble 99 match because it showed what a tough SOB he was. And that's the Mankind character in essence. You can beat him down, he won't give up.
And then Rock tried to fucking electrocute him, and he was unconscious, and the only reason why the match ended is because Shane McMahon played a video message.
Yeah. Thought it was a good match.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, I actually enjoyed
both
match in the halftime heat a week later better.
Yeah, which was basically a precursor to everything that's happening now.
Yeah.
They were ahead of their time on the empty arena match.
yeah, they were.
But this time, but you know, back then those matches were getting over because they weren't being done all the time. I mean, now we have no choice; they have to get on. And some of the guys are doing it better than others. When it's more of like a cinematic, you know, deal, you know, like with what happened at WrestleMania with the Boneyard match and all that, or the way John Moxley and Jake Hager did the empty arena match.
Yeah. Well, they did it similar to how Rock and Mankind did it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because John Moxley is a Mick Foley fan, or he's a Cactus Jack fan anyway. He patterns himself after Mick Foley as that I'm going to put my body through hell, but I'm also going to put your body through hell too.
That's what's interesting about his whole character, demeanor, whatever you want to call it. He's known as a badass, right?
But he's also he's not really known as a badass because he beats up everybody. He's known as a badass because he can take the punishment.
Yeah. Oh, it's like the the opening lines. 1992, WCW released an album called the WCW Slam Jam album. And it was basically they were going to use these as new theme songs for guys that were in the company. So the top stars were getting new theme songs that were sung by people that were actual songs. And Cactus Jack's theme song, like the first couple of lines of his song where he throws caution to the wind, doesn't care about himself. So, and then something about, you know, so it's crazy to think that he would care about somebody else. I'm not actually going to try to sing it because, but yeah, but it's just, it describes him to a T. He does not care about his own body. He will put himself through hell, but also too, like later on, and this is where like kind of him and John Moxley differ, is that John Moxley, while kicking your ass, is also going to try to make people laugh.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, especially during his promos when he's like, now remember people, there's one thing you got to do, call your grandmother. And like Mick Foley would almost say like the same type thing that, but Mick wouldn't shout it though. Mick would just, you know, cause Mick was a comedy guy. But also, too, I mean, he was more of a comedy guy in his promos and in his antics. When it came to wrestling, he took it very seriously.
And I think...
Yeah, he did.
Well, Mick really didn't choose to be a comedy guy, right? He kind of had to start doing that once the injury started piling up to bring another dimension on his
career. Yeah, when he introduced Mr. Sacco, I mean, he was 3 months off of, you know, getting thrown off that fucking cell.
Yeah. So,
wow.
And in the documentary, he said, I don't want to be known as just the guy that pulls the sock out of his tights. And he is, but in a good way, I'd say.
Yeah. And it was another dimension to the character.
It was. All right. So, I was not a big fan of Mr. Sacco when it first came out. I don't like knowing that someone was stuck. Take a sock in and sit in the pants throughout the whole night long, and he got in there to try to stuff it down my throat with a man in the claw. I'm like, I'm like, nah. I mean, I understand that was like your whole face turn, the whole Mr. Sacco type thing, or brought back the hardcore title, because I think that's what really helped illustrate the hardcore title right there was Mr. Sacco, quote unquote.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The hardcore title became bigger when he brought it back.
He was something else, and I think he made the comedy stuff work a lot. I think him and Rock was comedic gold. Let's talk about his later career a little bit. Well, first of all, we got to touch on the matches with Triple H. Is Triple H one of his greatest feuds?
When he was Cactus Jack, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Royal Rumble and No Way Out, right?
Yeah, Royal Rumble, No Way Out,
yeah.
The match that they had where Cactus Jack came in at the Garden on that Raw, where it was supposed to be Dude Love, but that's when they first introduced Cactus Jack to the WWF, where he came out and Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler's reaction was, oh, my God.
And it's just like the pop that they got when Mankind said it's Cactus Jack, and the people are just and Triple H is just like, oh fuck. And it was because it was a really good because Raw was not necessarily known for supposing to have really good matches in that era. 5 or 6 minutes, and then your commercial break, and then. You come back on and then it's the next segment. This match went longer than most matches do at that point, and the match told the story. The story was Mick Foley is in his backyard, the building he used to go to a lot when he was in college,
when he first expressed interest in wanting to be a wrestler. And Triple H is this asshole who, you know, Mick had had issue with. And this was the way to put the feud to bed. And then you revisit that same building 2.5 years later. Same type of match, almost, except for the Rumble match was not Falls Count Anywhere. Goes over, which was the right move because they were building him.
Yeah, and he had progressed a lot in that time span.
Yeah. He had progressed a lot, and he started fucking better. Well, fucking better people that looked like women. that did not write shitty books.
All right, B, China.
Yeah, I was just going to say, China, this episode's dedicated to you.
Yeah. Clintus, why don't you talk a little bit about the Royal Rumble match?
Now you want to, which one? Are we talking about the 98?
Or the Royal Rumble 2000, the street fight with Triple H and Cactus Jack.
Okay, so there's... Okay, I wasn't sure, but like you, there's 50 million in Royal Rumble matches. We are. I did bring up when you guys cut out with the three faces of the Foley Royal Rumble match. So I
Oh, yeah, we got to talk about that too.
Glennis already did, but we weren't on the line.
Oh, yeah, I wasn't there.
I did bring that up a little bit, and you know, I was like, you guys just cut off on me. I'm like, oh, great.
Yeah, that's when we realized that you got cut off.
So the street fight was amazing. I kind of like the Hell in a Cell better than the street fight, to tell you the truth. But I think the street fight was a good like precursor to, okay, I think this is going to be the end of his retirement. Because the how Mankind gimmick was put to rest.
Yeah.
I think that's what really like put the rest of the Mankind gimmick. If I ever wrestle again, I want to be known as just Mick Foley. Because in a way, Cactus Jack brung out like things that Mankind would not do. And watching him do the things, the barbed wire wrapped in baseball bat. Setting the thing on fire, going through tables. This is what people wanted to see. And I didn't think Triple H, and I think it brought out the best that Triple H had the offer. And I think, and not even if you go in to compare to Royal Rumble and you compare it to the match he had against Edge and that at WrestleMania, it was almost one and the same, and brought in the best. He forced the very best out of both those two wrestlers in that one match and having a street fight.
I can agree with that.
Yeah, and that's the thing is that, like, again, Mick could bring out the very best. I mean, look at what he did for Randy Orton.
Oh, I can't wait to talk.
Just brought it up, so we might as well fucking talk about it now.
I can't wait to talk about it. That's still one of my favorite matches of all time, and it's one of my favorite pay-per-views of all time because of that match and the triple threat. He made Randy Orton look like $1 million, and it was because of this match that Orton got the title reign, from what I've heard. That Vince was so happy with how Randy Orton looked matched that he lined up the title reign when he beat Benoit at SummerSlam.
Yeah. And that's the thing, too. And, see, Mick Foley, again, had been part of so many iconic moments so many iconic moments, this being one of them, and making Orton look good. What he did for Triple H. What, in essence, he did for Rock. You know, making Rock look good, even though Rock tried to fucking kill him. You know, he tried to help Val Venus get over as a bad guy. Unfortunately, that didn't work. But he tried. He put Val over at a fucking pay-per-view.
I didn't realize how... He's an important figure in Royal Rumble history.
Mick?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, coming out, the whole thing with... Because that was in Philly, too, right? The Royal Rumble 2004?
Yeah. Seems like a trend here.
Yeah, and when Mick came out and Mick did the
Pops here?
No. Mick did the surprise return, and you've talked about this on the show, and the whole night, King Taz is trying to get Jared to call him a coward.
Yeah.
And he finally says it, and then Mick comes out. He's like, I knew I wasn't a coward, and it's awesome, and he beats the shit out of Randy. What do you guys think is his greatest Royal Rumble moment? Is it the Three Faces of Foley's thing?
Anybody else want to answer this? Go ahead.
I think it was 2000.
I enjoy the Three Faces of Foley, because if you at the time you didn't realize him, like, well, it took me a while until after like 2000 I realized Mick Foley really did, and then when I finally realized that, wait a minute. This is the only kid guy in here that lost a Rumble 3 times in one match. Because at the time, I did not realize that Mick Foley was actually played 3 different characters. I actually thought Cactus Jack, Mankind, and Duval were 3 different people. I never really did. I was that young.
I think I thought the same thing.
And here's the thing, is that Rumble is very underrated for that reason. I mean, yes, you know, everybody's going to remember Austin winning the damn thing, and everybody was gunning for Steve Austin. But Mick Foley coming out as the Three Faces of Foley. See, nobody really is going to remember that Royal Rumble for the fact that Honky Tonk Man entered. Nobody's really going to remember that Royal Rumble for the fact that you know, Owen Hart got screwed over by Triple H, or the fact that Ahmed Johnson tripped on his way back to the locker room. They're going to remember it for the Three Faces of Foley. And JR and King's reaction again. Like, when Mankind came out, they're just like, eh? People are like, wait a minute. And then Dude Love came out again, and they're just like, what's going on here? But Jim Ross always has those iconic reactions to Royal Rumble entries. I mean, his best was when Bob Backlund entered in 2000, and he just goes, what in the hell is Bob Backlund doing here? So it's just when you can get people to have those iconic, like, lines. And Mick Foley has done that quite a bit, especially with Jim Ross. Where when he got thrown off the cell, and JR's just like, holy God, and King's like, yeah, he's dead. Or, you know, like when he got at that Royal Rumble 99, when he got knocked off that, and when he fell into that electrical equipment. And Michael Cole said he may have been electrocuted, and King's like, well, he's still moving.
One of the last things I want to talk about here, because I think we can gloss over the TNA run. I would much prefer if we glossed over the TNA.
The only memorable thing about TNA was the fact that him and Sting, for as old as and broken down as Foley was at that point, and for the fact that Sting was getting up there in age, and really you could not drag a lot of classic matches out of him at that point, but people were still able to. The fact that him and Foley had a very good steel cage match. All right. That is like the only highlight for me as far as Foley goes.
How good was Mick Foley as the commissioner in 2000?
That shit was fucking hilarious.
Fantastic.
Is he one of the best on-screen general managers / commissioners of all time?
Yes.
I kind of like William Regal as a commissioner, especially when they did the stuff with him and Tajiri.
I mean, he sucked as Raw general manager a few years ago.
Yeah, to think that we almost got Sandman or Hacksaw Jim Duggan as a general manager. Who knows how? Who knows what would have happened if they would have gone with those two? Or either one of those two. I mean, yeah, he sucked as Raw general manager, but also, too, at that point, he was pretty high on the, you know, on the green stuff. Or, I don't know,
it was on the green stuff.
But
about the general.
No.
So, I got a question for you. So, I got a question for you. You think about his general manager.
Oh, we were talking about Mick now.
His general manager is like Mick Foley. What about Commissioner Foley?
Yeah, that's what we're talking about.
I wasn't sure if you. I heard GM. I'm like, wait a minute. You guys talking about the like GM or like the commissioner?
Yeah, that's what Daniel was talking about. For some reason, I thought he was talking about William Regal.
Well, I was saying I didn't like him as Raw general manager when they came back, but I thought his stuff as the commissioner was fantastic.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
Saying the truth, I think his thing as commissioner, if you add him in there, I think you probably want he did Raw the best that any other commissioner ever did. So this day,
yeah.
I enjoy the Commissioner Foley better than what they had now. Because if it wasn't for Commissioner Foley, we will not have TLC at all. To the day he made he invented TLC.
Yeah, he did.
He brought out the best of the Hardys, the Dudleys, and Edge and Christian.
Yeah, and he made the idea for the Armageddon Hell in a Cell, which is a very underrated Hell in a Cell match with the six guys.
It's my favorite. That's my favorite one.
What about when he solved the mystery of who ran over Stone Cold Steve Austin?
Well, that kind of sucked, but that's not his fault. That's the booking.
But here's the thing, though, where he kind of came out and he spent that whole episode of Raw interviewing. You realize he only interviewed people with blonde hair? Because when Billy Gunn said, he was, the guy that drove the car was blonde. Mick Foley interviewed everybody that was. Linda McMahon had blonde hair at that time. Deborah, who was Steve Austin's wife at the time, Shawn Michaels, he even fucking cornered Crash Holly. And Crash was going back to his natural hair color. He wasn't really blonde at that time, but still, because Crash was blonde at the Survivor Series the year before, fucking Mick is cornering him. And then, of course, he corners Sky Suhati, and it's just like, but it was... To me, that was spending all night doing something like that, and it was funny to me because of, Mick, he was trying to do something because he wanted Stone Cold Steve Austin back on television. He had suspended Austin. The fans were booing the shit out of him, but he was trying to live up to his word. And because Mick was trying to prove, even though everybody already knew this, Mick's a good guy. And he's trying to live up to his promise that he made to the people that he was going to find out who ran over Austin. Well, yeah, just like he didn't talk to anybody else that night. It was anybody that was fucking blonde. Stone Cold Steve Austin had no idea who the fuck these people even were.
But it led to the famous Rikishi saying, "I did it for The Rock."
Last thing here, Doug, what did you think about his real-life feud that turned into a wrestling feud with Ric Flair?
10 years too late.
They got a good match out of it, though.
The I Quit match was good. The thing they did at Vengeance was, yeah.
Oh, when he tried to classically wrestle or whatever?
Yeah. But they had the I Quit match, and here's the thing. Anything past 1999, except for the retirement match that Flair had with Shawn Michaels, was just – well, I'll take that back, because a couple of things Flair did in 2005 were pretty good. which were a match with Kurt Angle, wrestling Triple H, and wrestling Carlito.
Shawn Michaels.
And Randy Orton. So, like, even 2004, the thing with Randy Orton. But besides all that stuff, Ric Flair was way past his prime. So
anyway,
I say it was still 10 years too late. If they would have done this, like, if they would have turned it into a storyline in WCW, because at that time, in 93, 94, Ric Flair had a lot of influence. Once they got rid of Ole Anderson, or not necessarily got rid of him, but once they fired Ole Anderson as the booker, because he was really starting to let people know how he actually fucking, it's basically going to be when you guys finally decide to get rid of me off the podcast.
It's not going to happen.
There is a group chat, but we don't have to talk.
I was just going to say. So, but like, once they finally got rid, once Flair got more power, they got rid of Ole, they got rid of Dusty. I mean, they still kept Dusty on as like a consultant or whatever. But Flair and Foley could have had that type of program in WCW. The problem is Flair saw nothing in Cactus. And they turned that into a pretty decent rivalry. But the issue is that Flair is a better heel than he is babyface. And Foley, as Mick Foley, is a better babyface than he is heel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's the issue I have with that, is that the roles should have been reversed.
Reversed, yeah. I agree. I agree with that.
I agree with that.
All right, guys. Final thoughts.
Wait.
Clarity.
How about his friendship with Terry Funk? We didn't mention that.
You know, I talked friendship about their tag team earlier, right?
Yeah, we did.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Tag.
And you
don't
think
have, like,
I don't
listen. Aren't they, like, good friends, right, too?
Yeah, Terry Funk helped mentor Mick Foley.
Okay. I thought there was, like, more to it than the tag team and stuff.
Yeah, no, I mean, he looked up to Terry Funk. Eric, we're trying to end it. Daniel and I have to work in the morning. See, not everybody can just sit in their rooms and be quarantined. People still have to work.
I know. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
No, don't be sorry. Doug's just a dick. Don't be sorry. So,
hey,
you didn't do anything wrong. Don't be sorry. But
this is what I get for after I got you a gift.
Wow. Yeah, he got you the JR book, and now this is how you fucking treat him.
Dog.
So they're big, they are good friends. And a quick note, it was Terry Funk's idea for Mick Foley to start the Hell in a Cell match on top of the cage. That was Terry Funk's idea.
Oh yeah, I think I heard that.
Yeah, he was talking to Mick, and Terry said that'd be something different.
Yeah, it was different.
Yeah.
Their friendship goes way back. Is there anything else you guys wanted to touch on, or you want to give our final thoughts?
We'll give
our final thoughts.
Eric, you want to start us off?
Yeah, Mick Foley was a hardcore legend, hardcore god. He's always going to be the fan favorite. Even if he was heel, you still get pops. He's the ultimate underdog that everybody loves. How can you not love Mick Foley? He is what an everyday average Joe wants to be, a wrestler. So he lived his dream as a wrestler. He got the title, and he lived his dream. Yeah, there you go.
Corbin?
All right, I want to piggyback. I do agree with that. He was an underdog who should have had more. Who should have gotten more than what he got gotten. I think, yes, he deserved more title runs
more in a way. He ended his career. I think prematurely too soon.
I think the injuries slowed him down and forced him out of retired more way than he shouldn't have.
Yeah.
Right. I would say Mick Foley is a legend, no doubt about it. I think a very underrated storyteller. I think the stories that he told with his body in that ring are better than anybody that's ever done it. He's one of the most believable wrestlers ever. He's the easiest wrestler to get behind because he's relatable. And he's a hard-working son of a bitch. And he should go down not only as one of the nicest guys ever to wrestle, but also as one of the most risk-taking. You know, he gave everything. He put everything on the line for what he loves. And you can't do anything but respect that.
Exactly. He paved the way for like guys like Dean Ambrose and all the hardcore guys right now.
Right. And here, the thing about Mick Foley is, again, you can almost say he's a trendsetter. Like I said earlier, he's the first guy that – or he's the first wrestler that wrote a book, like I said, that people actually read. And, you know, it made it popular for wrestlers to write books, you know, because people want to hear about, you know, your stories. And they want to hear about the backstage stuff really from you, from your point of view. They don't want to just read it from fucking Meltzer. Because they actually think that the people that live the stories would actually be telling the fucking truth, not some guy that writes a shit sheet. So, you know, Mick Foley can tell stories. Also can poke fun at Al Snow, which might not be that hard to do. Although, you know, and, you know, there's a lot of great wrestling books out there. Pretty sure I have quite a few of them here. But there, you know, there's still other, you know, great, huh?
No, I was saying I have the Jericho one, so the first one.
Wow.
So, and you know, a lot of these are good reads, so they're highly recommended, especially Foley's, because again, he's a great storyteller, and that's what helped him be a great, you know, pro wrestler. Because he could tell the story, whether it be as Cactus Jack, whether it be as Mankind, whether it be as Dude Love. I mean, and think of what he was able to do with Dude Love. He was already successful as Cactus Jack. He's already successful as Mankind. Now he brings this Dude Love character, which, you know, he's this heartthrob that has the body of both Daniel and I. So, but, you know, he got over. And, you know, that first night when the girls came in the ring and danced with him, I was just like, how much did they pay these boys?
That's awesome.
But, like, my final thoughts on Foley are basically this. He is very successful. I'm probably one of the nicer guys in the wrestling business, for the most part. Should not have had a reality TV show. I mean, his wife should not have gotten camera time because I'm pretty sure she broke a lot of cameras with that ugly mug. But no, like my true, sincere final thoughts are Mick Foley is, you know, he's one of those guys that his career is going to be, he's got a lot of memorable moments that people are not going to forget.
Exactly.
I totally agree.
He still gets a pop through the
chair.
Yep. Thank you, guys.
Thanks,
guys.
We'll
see you Sunday night.
We pretty much nailed it on the head. We'll see you next week, and we'll see you this Sunday for this week in wrestling.
Yeah,
we have a lot to chat about on Sunday. So.
Especially the Money in the Bank, which I just found out about, too.
Oh, yeah. It's our final show before Money in the Bank. No, yeah. It's,
yeah, and we got
kind of
got some announcements to go through as far as the fantasy wrestling goes.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Daniel Daniel, I think, won, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sweet.
All right, guys. We'll see you next week.
Yes. Yeah, later, everybody. Thank you, guys. Thanks, Clance. Thanks, Doug. Thanks, Daniel.
Thank you, Eric.
Later.
Later. Adios.